The Assassin.
You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest. You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest.
What up, y'all? You're listening to Sports Talk with Trop, and I'm your host, Katie Trop. Well, we are almost out of our sports fan purgatory 2.0 for the year. The All-Star break is coming to a close. We finally get some more baseball tonight. So we are in the second half swing of things in baseball. You know, training camps are starting to kick off. So we're going to be talking football. Hey, TJ Watt, he signed an extension with the Pittsburgh Steelers to become the highest paid defensive player in the league right now. They're locked in. Then we've got, summer league basketball going on. But it's pretty much just all baseball right now. And so that's what we're going to talk about today. We're just going to see where everybody is at before we're headed into the second half of the season. So let's break it down by each division. And we'll see who the statistical leaders are right now at this point in the season. So let's just go ahead and start off with the American League. And we're going to start off with the American League Central because the top team in the league is in the American League Central, and that is the Detroit Tigers. Right now, they have an 11.5-game lead over the Minnesota Twins, a 12-game lead over the Kansas City Royals, a 12-game lead over the Cleveland Guardians, and then a 27-game lead over the Chicago White Sox. So obviously, the White Sox ain't going nowhere. I don't really think Minnesota, Kansas City, or Cleveland have a shot at catching Detroit simply because Detroit is hands down the best team in the league right now. They have great pitching staff. They are great with their starting pitching, their relief pitching, their closing. And then you talk about their offense. They are one of the top offensive teams in the league. They're great defensively. They pretty much don't have a soft spot really anywhere in this lineup. They are just locked and loaded. They've been playing great the whole first half of the season. So it's really going to take an epic collapse from them, plus an epic run from one of these teams. Now, I will say, the Guardians are always known to make a second half run, so you really can't overlook them. The Twins, I don't know. The Royals, they have not got their footing going at all this season, but there's still a second half. Anything can happen, but I just kind of feel like Detroit has this division lockdown and the American League lockdown, and I just kind of feel like it is their season to take, pretty much. Then moving on to the American League West. Right now, the Houston Astros have a 5-game lead over the Seattle Mariners, then an 8.5-game lead over the Texas Rangers, a 9-game lead over the Los Angeles Angels, and a 16-game lead over the A's right now. So obviously, the A's are completely out of this division. I feel like the Astros, they are getting going, and they're about to get healthier because they're about to get some guys back from injury once we hit the second half here. But even so, they are playing some of the best baseball right now, and I just feel like they're probably going to take this division as well. It's going to take a solid run. I mean, don't get me wrong, Mariners, good team. Texas Rangers, good team. And the Angels are actually surprisingly playing pretty well, but I kind of feel like the Angels are going to be one of those teams that probably falls off the second half of the season. The Rangers just haven't found any consistency, so I can't really, expect them to take this division. And then the Mariners, it feels like they're probably going to be the best bet to take the division from the Astros, but I just kind of feel like once the Astros have the lead in this division, it's theirs, and it's probably going to take an epic collapse. You know, the Astros aren't playing typical Astros baseball that we're used to seeing, but they're still the Astros. They have a lot of veteran leadership on this team. They know what it takes to win a championship. They know what it takes to make the playoffs. And so, I can't really count them out. I feel like the Mariners are probably the best bet to maybe make a run for this division, but I just think it's all Astros for the rest of the second half of the season. And then rounding out the American League in the American League East, which is obviously the most stacked division. I feel like every team, including Baltimore, you know, Baltimore is 11.5 games out right now, and they're last in the division, but they still have it in them to at least make things uncomfortable for the rest of the teams in the American League East. So right now, Toronto has a 2-game lead over the New York Yankees. a 3-game lead over the Boston Red Sox, who are the hottest team in the league right now, and then a 5.5-game lead over the Tampa Bay Rays and 11.5-game lead over the Baltimore Orioles. I feel like any one of these teams could win this division. I feel like the Yankees are overall the best team and the more consistent team to win this division. But like I said, Toronto, you can't overlook them. Boston, you cannot overlook this team. I don't think this is fluky with Boston. I kind of felt like Boston was going to take their time and actually be a second-half team, where this is where they're going to make their run and potentially make things uncomfortable for the rest of the teams in this division. And then Tampa Bay, they are a team that's always been known to just randomly put it together at just weird times. So don't overlook them either. So I just feel like any team in the American League East has a shot, like I said, including Baltimore, even though it looks like Baltimore is going to be sellers at the trade deadline here. But I'm tanking the Yankees to win this division simply because I think they're the better team. They've got Judge, Rodon, and Fried. Whereas Toronto hasn't really found any consistency. Boston hasn't found any consistency. Neither has Tampa, and neither has the Orioles. Whereas the Yankees, yes, there's lots of questions about this team, but they do have, you know, a really solid roster, and they could get it going at any time. Moving on to the National League, and let's begin in the National League West, because the Dodgers are the overall team in the National League right now. They currently have a 5.5-game lead on the San Diego Padres, then a 6-game lead over the San Francisco Giants, an 11-game lead on the Arizona Diamondbacks, and a 35.5-game lead on the Colorado Rockies. So yeah, I think we could say not only are the Colorado Rockies not going to win their division, but they are the worst team in baseball. It has just been, I don't even know how, and it's crazy too, because I've watched some Rockies games, because I'm a Giants fan, so I'm definitely going to catch some Rockies games, and you got to say, these Denver fans out, I see them actually attending games. I mean, there are, of course, when the Rockies are playing a shitty team that nobody wants to see, like the Rays or something, nobody's there. But when they're playing like the Giants and the Dodgers and the Yankees and stuff, man, the stadium is packed out, and it's not just opposing teams fans, it's just they're showing out. So good for them that they're actually getting asses in seats. But they ain't putting any good baseball out on the field there. Whereas the rest of the teams in this division are. Arizona's had its struggles, especially because of the injuries. The Giants, you know, this Devers trade hasn't really worked out for them. He really hasn't found his footing with the team. So we'll see what happens with them. The Padres, you know, they're the Padres, always up and down. And then, of course, the Dodgers. I don't think anybody in this division has taken the lead from the Dodgers. So while I think it's going to be interesting from the Padres and the Giants and the Diamondbacks this second half of the season, I still think the Dodgers are going to easily win the National League West. Then moving on to the National League Central, right now the Cubs have a 1-game lead over the Milwaukee Brewers, a 6.5-game lead over the St. Louis Cardinals, a 7.5-game lead over the Cincinnati Reds, and an 18.5-game lead over the Pittsburgh Pirates. This is a very stacked division as well. I think the Cubs have it locked down. I just kind of feel like their consistency has, they've just played much better as a team, especially on the offensive side of the ball. I mean, this is a team that's played so well on the offensive side of the ball and just really overcome all the injuries that they have had. But Milwaukee, they're just always a team that's going to be on your ass. St. Louis, you never can overlook them. But look out for the Cincinnati Reds. It's a Terry Francona managed team. And once they get going, don't be shocked if we see this team snag one of those last wild card spots. I don't expect them to win the division because, like I said, I feel like Chicago's got it locked down. Even though they only have a 1-game lead over the Brewers, I don't really expect the Brewers to win this division. They're just kind of a team that's very streaky. Whereas the Cubs have actually been very, very consistent this year. And I think it's going to take a lot to snag the NL Central from them. But look out for the Cincinnati Reds. I kind of feel like the Cincinnati Reds are a team you need to probably the top team in the second half of this season to look out for. Like I said, I don't expect them to take their division, but maybe snag one of those wild card spots and maybe upset somebody in the first round of the playoffs. And then moving on to the National League East, right now the Philadelphia Phillies have a 0.5-game lead over the New York Mets. And like I said, I feel like this division is coming down to those two teams. Because there's a 10.5-game lead over the Miami Marlins, a 12.5-game lead over the Atlanta Braves, and a 17-game lead over the Washington Nationals. I don't think any of those three teams, the Miami Marlins obviously are going to be sellers at the trade deadline here. The Atlanta Braves, who the hell knows what's going on with this team? And then the Washington Nationals are the Washington Nationals. So this division's going to come down to the Phillies and the Mets. Don't be shocked if you see both of these teams in the playoffs. As a matter of fact, I feel like whoever doesn't win the division is probably going to be one of the top seeds, probably the top wild card seed in the playoffs. But obviously, we have a lot of baseball to go. But I expect these two to be basically exchanging daily who has the lead of the National League East. The Mets have actually been the more consistent team between the two of them, but the Phillies are starting to get going. They are really starting to get going. I kind of feel like if they're able to stay healthy, they're able to start playing some consistent baseball, they should easily take this division, because the Mets have been battling through injury after injury after injury, especially to the starting pitching position, and that's just a big deal for them. But both of these teams are playing solid baseball right now, and I expect them to just be battling it out, because Miami and, shockingly, the Braves and the Nationals got no shot at this division. So who is leading the league in all the batting categories right now? Of course, leading the league in batting average right now is Aaron Judge of the New York Yankees. He's batting a 355 right now. And leading the league in home runs and RBI is catcher Cal Raleigh with the Seattle Mariners. He's got 38 home runs right now and 82 RBI on the season. He just won the home run derby as well, so he is just having a phenomenal year. What sucks for him is he's with the Seattle Mariners, so I don't expect him to make any type of playoff run, whereas Aaron Judge is not only probably going to make a playoff run, but he's probably winning that MVP too. And then the pitching categories right now, Paul Skenes has the lowest ERA with a 2.01 ERA. Fried and Peralta lead the league in wins right now with 11 wins. And then Robert Suarez, the closer of the San Diego Padres, he leads the league right now with 28 saves on the season. All right, so we're moving on to the Trop 10 list this week. You know, I did the Trop 10 MLB GOATs of the 1960s 2 weeks ago, so we are going to keep on with that theme, and we are going to do the Trop 10 MLB GOATs from the 1970s. And this was a really difficult list for me because, man, there were some excellent pitchers in this time, but also, man, like, my top three, it was really, really, really difficult to whittle it down, because the three at the top, I was like, whoa. I mean, statistically, they're great in all their categories, championships. It's just, when we get there, you'll find out. But this was a very difficult list for me to whittle down. So let's begin with number 10 on my Trop 10 MLB GOATs of the 1970s. Jim Rice played left field for the Boston Red Sox from 1974 to 1989. His career stats, career batting average of .298. With 2,452 hits, 382 home runs, 1,451 RBI. He was the MVP in 1978. He led the league in home runs in 1977, 1978, and 1983. He was just one of the big league hitters of this era. Definitely a legendary Boston Red Sox, and just one of the best hitters of the 1970s. Then at number 9 on my Trop 10 MLB GOATs of the 1970s, Willie Stargell. He played left field for the Pittsburgh Pirates, left field and first base for the Pittsburgh Pirates from 1962 to 1982. He is a two-time champion. He won the championship in 1971 and 1979. He also won an MVP in 1979. His career stats, career batting average of .282, 2,232 hits, 475 home run, and 1,540 RBI. Also, this is another guy who, of this era, one of the best hitters. And obviously, that 1979 season was huge for him, since he was the MVP and won a championship. I mean, you can't beat that, having a season like that, but definitely one of the most dominating hitters of the 70s. Then at number 8 on my Trop 10 MLB GOATs from the 1970s, Rod Carew. He played with the Minnesota Twins and the California Angels. Played second base and first base from 1967 to 1985. His career stats, and man, he has some excellent career stats, especially batting average. Career batting average of a .328. That means just every time this dude came up to bat, he pretty much got on base. 3,053 hits, 92 home run, and 1,015 RBI. Now, obviously, it was more about him getting on base rather than hitting the long ball, because he only had 92 home runs. But this guy was just one of the most consistent batters you will ever see. He was a MVP in 1977, Rookie of the Year in 1967, and as I said, seven-time batting champion in 1969, 1972, 73, 74, 75, 77, and 78. So that just goes to show you just what kind of domination he had at the plate. And, I mean, he had a lot of competition in this era. That is for damn sure. But Rod Carew, just one of the most consistent hitters you will ever see in Major League Baseball. Then at number seven on my top 10 MLB GOATs of the 1970s, Mike Schmidt. Played third base with the Philadelphia Phillies from 1972 to 1989. Career batting average of .267, 2,234 hits, 548 home runs, and 1,595 RBI. He won a championship in 1980. He is a three-time MVP. Now, most of his domination when it came to the MVPs and the championships, definitely in the 80s, so don't be shocked if you hear his name again in the 80s. But, I mean, he just was a killer during the 70s, and you'll find out why after these stats. But his three-time MVPs, he won them in 1980, 81, and 86. But he is a 10-time Gold Glove Award winner, and he won a good portion of those Gold Gloves in the 70s. Also a six-time Silver Slugger, another, you know, 70s, 80s. Stat there. He is the eight-time home run leader. That was in the 70s and 80s as well. And then he also had a four-home run game on April 17th of 1976. Then at number six on my top 10 MLB GOATs of the 1970s, Steve Carlton. He was a starting pitcher for the St. Louis Cardinals and the Philadelphia Phillies. Also played for a few different teams, but these guys, if they played like 1 year, 2 year, and ended their careers, I'm not really talking about those years. I'm really talking about their main years. And Steve Carlton, his main years were with the St. Louis Cardinals and the Philadelphia Phillies from 1965 to 1988. His career numbers, 329 wins, 244 losses, 322 ERA, and 4,136 strikeouts. So he's a member of the 4,000 strikeout club, which is huge. He's actually won the Triple Crown for pitchers in 1972. Two-time champion, 1967 and 1980, and he is a four-time Cy Young Award winner. Yes, a four-time Cy Young Award winner. It didn't even crack the top five in this GOATs list here. He won the Cy Young in 1972, 1977, 1980, and 1982, and just one of the hands-down greatest pitchers of this era. And let me tell you, there's a few others above him, and you're like, whoa. What an excellent era for pitching and hitting. Then at number five on my top 10 MLB GOATs of the 1970s, I cannot believe I ranked him this low, but unfortunately I did, just because the guys above him I felt like just were slightly, had a little bit more on their resume than him, but Joe Morgan. I can't believe I put him at number five, but he is one of the greatest of this era. I mean, some people put him at number one of this era, but I did not. But he is one of the greatest of this era for sure. Played second base with the Houston Astros and the Cincinnati Reds and a few other teams as well. From 1963 to 1984, career batting average of .271, 2,517 hits, 268 home runs, 1,133 RBI, and 689 stolen bases. He's a two-time champion in 1975 and 1976, two-time MVP in 1975 and 1976, and a five-time Gold Glove Award winner, won all five of them in a row from 1973 to 1977. This is the definition of a five-tool player. Every time he came up to bat, you didn't know what he was going to do. It was a good chance he was getting on base, though. Not always going to hit him out of the park, but he was capable of doing that, capable of stealing bases, of course. Then defensively, the dude was just a monster. Joe Morgan, it was one of the greatest baseball players ever. And when I ranked him at five, I was like, holy shit, I cannot believe he is this low on my list. Because like I said, some people will put him at number one, but the people above him for me personally had slightly a bit more on their resume than him. So at number four on my top 10 MLB GOATs of the 1970s, I have Tom Seaver, starting pitcher with the New York Mets and the Cincinnati Reds from 1967 to 1986. Career numbers of 311 wins, 205 losses, a .286 ERA, and 3,640 strikeouts. He won the championship in 1969. He is a three-time Cy Young Award winner in 1969, 1973, 1975, won Rookie of the Year in 1967, led the league three times in wins, led the league three times with the lowest ERA, and also led the league five times in strikeouts. He also threw a no-hitter on June 16th of 1978. Then at number three on my top 10 MLB GOATs of the 1970s, this was really, really difficult for me, y'all. These three guys, you could have put any one of them at number one, and I really struggled. I really, really struggled with three and two because their impact on their team, because they're both on the same team, but their impact on the team, it's like you could really make an argument for all of them, or I mean for both of them, but I just went with the one who's got the records. So number three on my top 10 MLB GOATs of the 1970s is Johnny Bench. Played catcher for the Cincinnati Reds from 1967 from 1983. Career at batting average of .267, 2,048 hits, 389 home run, and 1,376 RBI. He is a two-time champion in 1975 and 1976, won the MVP in 1970 and 1972, won the Rookie of the Year in 1968, and he is a 10-time Gold Glove Award winner and won all 10 of them 10 years straight from 1968 to 1977. And I mean, like I said, this Cincinnati Reds team of this era, it is really difficult to pick who the heartbeat was of this team. Johnny Bench definitely was one of the greatest players ever. But I had to put Pete Rose above him at number two. I went back and forth between those two. I really did. And I just did. I only put Pete Rose above him because Pete Rose owns two MLB records that still stand to this day. That was the only way I could justify putting Pete Rose above Johnny Bench. But real talk, you could rotate between the two of them. And it's difficult to decide who of the two was the heartbeat of that Cincinnati Reds team, even though there was a lot of talent on that Cincinnati Reds team. So anyways, number two on my top 10 MLB GOATs of the 1970s, Pete Rose. Played outfield and infield for the Cincinnati Reds and the Philadelphia Phillies from 1963 to 1986. Career batting average of .303. Career hits, 4,256 hits, 160 home run, and 1,314 RBI. He is a three-time champion. That was another thing that put him above Bench. One more championship. 1975, 1976, and 1980. He won the MVP in 1973, Rookie of the Year in 1963, two-time Gold Glove Award winner, and three-time batting champion. The two records that he still holds to this day in Major League Baseball history, career hits with 4,256 career hits, and games played, 3,562. So we'll see if anybody's able to break either of those records. But that, for me, is what really put Pete Rose above Johnny Bench. But it was really, really difficult. And then number one on my top 10 MLB GOATs of the 1970s, Nolan Ryan. Starting pitcher for many, many teams over the years, but the New York Mets, the California Angels, the Houston Astros, and the Texas Rangers from 1966 to 1993. Career numbers, 324 wins, 292 losses, a 3.19 ERA, 5,714 strikeouts. Let me say that again, 5,714 strikeouts. Nolan Ryan was the strikeout king. This dude, oh God, Nolan Ryan was such an amazing pitcher. He would just barrel you down. He did not care who he was going up against. He was going to strike your ass out. He won a championship in 1969. He led the league twice in ERA, and then, of course, led the league 11 times in strikeouts. So like I said, he was known as the strikeout king. I mean, not one Cy Young Award, which is just crazy. But, I mean, you did just listen to the pitchers that I rattled off prior to him on this list. But, I mean, it's just Nolan Ryan was so consistent, and you just, anytime he was pitching, it's just like, you were lucky if you got a hit. He was pretty much striking out the entire batting order from start to finish. And he would play the game from inning one to inning nine. And a couple of records that he still owns to this day. I'm going to say it again. I just said it. His career strikeouts, 5,714. Yes, that should come as no shock to you. That is a record. Even when I was writing down his career statistics, I was like, and I wrote down the strikeouts, I was like, is that an MLB record? I mean, that feels like it's gotta. And then as I'm looking through the rest of his stats, I stumble upon the records he owns. And of course, that is a record. I mean, 5,714 strikeouts. Good luck to all the pitchers after to try and get to break that one. But then also another record that he owns, 7 no hitters. Let me say that again. 7 no hitters. That's also an MLB record. So Nolan Ryan was just amazing pitcher. I mean, just amazing pitcher. So my top 10 MLB GOATs of the 1970s is number 10, Jim Rice. Number 9, Willie Stargell. Number 8, Rod Carew. Number 7, Mike Schmidt. Number 6, Steve Carlton. Number 5, Joe Morgan. Number 4, Tom Seaver. Number 3, Johnny Bench. Number 2, Pete Rose. And number 1, the great Nolan Ryan. I mean, like I said, this was a very difficult list for me to whittle down. I did it. And like I said, Nolan Ryan, that dude was crazy. He was such a strikeout king. It was just amazing to watch. But this was a great list of players. And like I said, it was real difficult, especially once I got to the top 5. I'm like, oh my God, how am I putting Joe Morgan at 5? Because like I said, people will put him at number 1 because he was a 5-tool player. Literally the definition of 5-tool player. I kind of feel like if there is a player you point to as 5-tool player, Joe Morgan's probably number 1. Probably. There's a few others, but I feel like Joe Morgan's probably number 1 5-tool player. All right, y'all. Enjoy the weekend of sports, and I will talk to you fools on Monday.